to those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is the God Journey.
Brokoto.
Or brokento. Or a good morning in Hebrew. Something in there is kind of close to what we supposedly learned while we were there. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. I want to welcome you back to the God Journey after a week off, because we were wandering around the Middle East together, and I'm not alone today. I have somebody with me. And who are you?
Sarah Jacobson.
Oh, Sarah's with me today. We thought we'd kind of explore the Israel trip and do it together. My hope was, while we were in Israel, that we'd have time to, particularly toward the end of the trip, to get people to record some stuff, and I brought stuff to do that, but it just, there was no time. There was just no way that that worked out. So instead, Sarah and I are going to kind of talk through some of the joys of this trip and some of the things that we learned and saw in our time in Israel. And for those of you who are with us who might listen to this podcast, and you know what's fun to hear is that people who listened to this podcast a number of years ago don't listen so much to it now, because they've kind of found their own trek along a journey that's alive and fun and real. And so I don't always listen, which I think is great news. I'd much rather people find that in other areas of their life after listening for a little while, because we do talk about the same things a bit over and over again, because we want those things to stick in our hearts. But in any case, if some of you who were with us on that trip listen to this and say, man, I'd love to make some comments, whatever, I'll give you some options. You can comment on the blog right away at the God Journey and just tag it onto this thing. But I would love if some of you would add your voices to this. And so next week's podcast, if we have some of those, we'll do it. And you can do that in a number of ways. Number one, you can just call the God Journey comment line, 805-539-6980. That's 805-539-6980. You can call and you just, you know, lay it out there, what it is that you'd want to say about the trip, what it meant to you. Or if you want to Skype in, you can do it at thegodjourney.com. Thegodjourney.com will allow you to leave a voicemail there. And I'll put some of those together. And don't worry if you kind of like flub it up or whatever when you're recording it. I'll edit so you'll look brilliant. It's not a problem. So don't worry about if you kind of trip over your words or want to restart over or whatever. Just do it, because I have editing capabilities and it's fabulous. And the last thing you can do if you'd like to more have a personal deal, email me. WayneJ@Lifestream.org. And we'll set up a Skype appointment where I could just, you know, we could talk a little bit and let you record some stuff, because I'd love for people to get a fix on it. I've been to the Holy Land before. Sarah, this was your first trip.
Yes, it was.
Tell me about it, man. Was it good? Was it? Give me your thoughts about it.
It was really good. It wasn't. I didn't know what to expect, so I didn't go with having high expectations at all, and just knew a few of the people who were going there with us, and I didn't. Oh, probably just a handful. I didn't know any of the others, and so it was quite an enjoyable trip.
Now, people haven't heard from you on this podcast since we did the one, gosh, a little over a year ago, about the rough spot in your journey, and I get asked everywhere I go, how's Sarah doing? So let me ask, how's Sarah doing? Apart from the Israel thing, we'll come back to that, but how's Sarah doing?
Doing pretty good. It's a work in progress, ups and downs, but...
But the healing continues. I mean,
yes.
Greater freedom. Yeah, I'm noticing that. I love where we've landed in that whole thing. But just so people know, things are going well. We're not talking about the details of everything as it unfolds. But anyway, just that you're doing well and that it is a journey. There's still things that God's doing. And I hope that's true for all of us till the day we die. I don't think any of us get the point of saying, you're done. We've got it all done. And if you've gotten there, please let me know, because that'd be worth a podcast just to interview somebody who's gotten to that point where everything's done. So we got to Israel. What things, as you look back quickly, just what things stick out in your mind that were meaningful to you?
I had the one thing that I was looking forward to in all the lists that I had seen was the Garden of Gethsemane. And we were able to get into there was a public one and there's a private one. And we were able to get into the private Garden of Gethsemane, and I really enjoyed that.
Because it was a garden?
Partly.
Yeah.
Large partly. I mean, very, very, very old olive trees and seeing those.
And someone had just trimmed them, so you borrowed a little sprig of olive.
Yes.
made a nightmare for us getting through customs here.
It added only a few minutes. Not much, it did.
The agricultural inspectors had to inspect it. I hope all the rest of you that brought one of those home also declared those, so they'd have a chance to
look. It was fine. I got to keep it. The beagle didn't stop and sniff out my bag.
The beagle didn't sniff it out?
No, the beagle did not stop and sniff it out.
I'm not sure the beagle's looking for olive scent.
It probably wasn't, but he took it out of the bag, and he looked at it under a little
microscope.
And just check to make sure. And so, yes, I do have it. And
what else sticks out?
Just how people from all over the world were on the same bus, and just the friendships that were formed during those days that we were there, and just the fun and the just little humor and jokes and just sharings that were going amongst the people. It was, the Sea of Galilee was a very interesting area. And in going back and when reading in the Bible, to be able to, in my visually, have a sense of where things are, and they were all closer than I had anticipated. And when we took the boat ride out there, and you could kind of, you know, look around and know that's where the thing with the pigs happened over there. And then we got the, where he lived. And so you could be able to kind of see in the areas and just see how close everything was.
Yeah. Where Mary of Magdala came from and where the Sermon on the Mount might have been. And it's a pretty small area.
Yeah.
And just so some of you know how a trip like this works out, just if you've never been before or think about it someday, people arrived at the airport, and then we immediately went out about 45 minutes out of town to Netanya, out on the coast, the Mediterranean coast. We spent a night there, let everybody kind of get in, get acquainted, get some sleep, begin to fight their jet lag. And then the next day is a big day up the coast to Caesarea, where Peter brought the gospel to the Gentiles, despite his better judgment. God kind of overrode all that. And then to Tel Megiddo, Carmel, Nazareth, and then arrived out in Galilee for the next three nights. We were in that whole area. And then from there, we moved down for the last five nights. We were down in Jerusalem and saw stuff there. And during part of our stay in Jerusalem, we took a one-day trip out to the Dead Sea, Masada, En-Gedi, some of those places. And the things we saw, I've seen most of this stuff before, but there were a few days that brought me to some new locations. I really enjoyed Caesarea Philippi, not the first Caesarea we mentioned, but there's another Caesarea Philippi further up on the very northern border of Israel. It's where Jesus had the conversation about, who do men say that I am? Who do you say that I am? And he talks about him going to the cross from there, and Peter kind of jumps in and says, no, no, God forbid it. And so that was a meaningful place for me.
And I don't know where everybody is at processing the reality of, you know, seeing and being there where people, you know, thousands of years ago have been. And I know in talking and when we were going around throughout the week, and there were several of us that were just having a hard time wrapping our minds around the fact that Jesus was there, or Abraham or David and, you know, Saul and all those people. And I still, it's a hard concept to be able to process that and through. And so it's not that I don't accept and believe it. It's just a reality. It was hard. It's kind of like a surreal type of thing. You're here now, but then that's where a lot of those things did take place. And still I still try and process that through.
Yeah, I know for me, it helped when I got home, was reading scriptures over the next weeks and months. Then it just kind of settles in. That view was a view Jesus saw.
Yeah.
That was a place he was, or like you said, Abraham or the others. So I do think that settles in time. I mean, you know it in your mind, but it's tough to grasp the fact that they were. I mean, we live in California where nothing's older than 200 years that God didn't make, so...
Well, and there's so much history. I mean, there's just lots and lots of history for 4,000 years on. And it's just, one got conquered, and so they just build on top of another, and so you're just, you know, layers of going off of different things that occurred, and so it's just a lot to take in all at one time. And I did, I mean, at the Sea of Galilee, where we went to that one museum, or I don't know if it's what you call it, where they had the old boat.
Yeah,
the museum. And that was, I mean, it was a partial boat, but to actually see a real boat that was way back then. And
yeah, it's one that wasn't there last time I was there, but they've unearthed in the last 10 years or so some boat in the, from some sandbar that is 2,000 years old. It would have been on the lake about the time Jesus was. So
that was just so, I mean, there's just so many different things to be able to process. And so,
you know where I was undone, I think, the most for me. We were coming up, we were in Jericho for a while, and then we're coming up to Jerusalem. It's not more than 8 to 10 miles, but it's straight up a windy hill. And it's kind of that ascending to Jerusalem that Jesus would have done, or any of the Galileans coming down for festivals or whatever. And as we're coming up the hill, and I know we're getting close because I've been there before, and the guide and the bus driver put on a recording of Jerusalem, Jerusalem, lift up your gates and sing that old hymn. And it was pretty... It was a pretty lame version of the song in terms of some of the better versions of it. But I was somehow captured by the words, the nostalgia. I knew what we were about to see because we're going to come through these tunnels and then right onto Mount Scopus and be able to look down on Jerusalem. It was a hazy day, so not everyone who hadn't been there before, it's tough to take in what you're seeing right away.
Yep.
But for me, I knew exactly what we were seeing. I knew where Mount Zion was, where David was, where the temple was. And that song, which not only talks about Jerusalem, the present city of Jerusalem, it also talks about the new Jerusalem coming. And for me, when I arrived on that mountain and looked over that city from that higher point around it, I was just overwhelmed that here is the place God chose to reveal so much of himself to the world. And it's here at this place that the new Jerusalem arrives someday. And God redeems the whole of creation, heaven and earth, and remakes it into a new heaven and a new earth. And I was overwhelmed standing on that spot. And I felt like I was, I mean, I'm sure others might have been, but not like, I didn't see anybody's eyes what I was somewhat experiencing. But I was undone by that moment. I was undone by praying for the peace of Jerusalem, by having an awareness that this city is, it's not much to look at in terms of like most cities with skyscrapers and all that stuff. It's kind of hard to make out where the center of town is if you don't know where it is, because it's surrounded by other hills and lots of housing everywhere. But to think Temple Mount was there, to think Abraham offered Isaac there, to think all that went on as God reveals himself in this world, Jesus being there, his death, resurrection, ascension, and the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, and then the new Jerusalem coming. And I was just overwhelmed to be standing in that place and to embrace whatever God was doing in my heart through it. So,
yeah, I think when we went to... I'm trying to think where we were in the church.
We were in a lot of those. Oh, we sang?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, St. Anne's. There's it's a stone curved altered area congregation, very minimalist in terms of decorations inside.
Yeah, but that was next to the
Pool of Bethesda.
Yeah.
Where Jesus healed the paralytic man. Someone take up his bed and walk.
And Daniel, our guide, had told us that the acoustics were really well, were really good in there. And so we went in there. And you know, I do not like cathedrals. I don't like churches and anything. But
you mean buildings now?
Buildings, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But that was a very simple but yet beautifully beautiful building. It was really beautiful. But then when we were in there and we sat down, all of us were, most of us, I think, were sitting down, and it was just spontaneous. And maybe somebody, you, I don't know if you asked anybody to kind of take a lead in singing out one, leading out one song, but then different ones were singing songs, and we sang for, I don't know if we were in there 15, 20 minutes. I don't know how long we were in there.
Know.
It was just really beautiful. And I know there were several people that were touched, and it was just...
The acoustics were amazing. The sound was... We sounded like we knew what we were doing.
Yes, we did. We sounded pretty good.
There were some singers in that group, and the reverberations off the walls, it's just the most acoustically incredible place in the world to sing.
Yeah, it's just hard to... I'm trying to figure out how to say it. It's just hard to believe that we're really standing in places where Jesus was. And that I'm sure it maybe at some point that will come.
Yeah. Right
clear.
There in that pool, right outside the door of that place, is where Jesus healed the paralytic man, told him to take up his bed and walk. And it's the pool of Bethesda and Jesus was there. And yeah.
I just thought I would be more, emotionally
moved.
Yeah, moved than what I really was, but it wasn't that I'm not emotionally about where it was. It's just I just think it's hard to get that concept of that he was actually here. And
there's so much to take in. If you've never been and you ever have a chance to go, I know people are already asking, when am I planning the next trip? And I'm not the guy that's going to take a tour there every year or two, unless God absolutely makes me. I just, as fun as it was, we had a great time. I've got a lot to do behind the scenes to make that whole thing work. And so I don't get to relax and enjoy it as much as everybody else gets to relax and enjoy it. And so as much as I did and I had a ball, I know that when I travel in the world and I go that many time zones, there's a different kind of conversation I want to be in with people and a different way of connecting. So my daughter's begging me to go again so that she'll have a chance to go. Our son went with us, which was...
Yes, that was special to have him.
Talk about it. I mean, what was special to you about having Andrew with us? No, most people don't even know I have a son because all my illustrations include Juliet. They always say, you never talk about your son. And the reason I don't is because he asked me not 2 years ago. He said, I don't want to be, the public guy that everybody knows about. And so I've honored that with him, but he did go with us on this trip, and he was kind of the life of the party.
Well, he did. Yes, he was... he's a great kid, and he knew one of the persons that was on the trip, and they roomed together, so Andy is a great photographer. He's just
he's got an eye, yep.
And it was cute he was giving lessons throughout the tour and helping people and learn how to use their cameras and take pictures.
I noticed at various sites too, and Andy would take a picture somewhere. People would follow in that same spot to see what he was seeing and then take pictures there too.
And it was just really great to have him be there. Get to know some of the people that we knew. And there's one couple that we have known quite a bit, know them quite well.
We've been with them in 5 different continents over the last 10 years. So.
And so it was nice that they got to meet Andy and Andrew, I should say. He goes by Andrew, not Andy.
He was Andy growing up, Andrew post-college. So.
He was just really very helpful with people. He'd sit down and he didn't necessarily just have to sit with us, and he was sitting with other people, and people throughout all the group was like that. Michael from Kenya was there, and just to see, people just watch over and include Michael and each other, really. It was an including of others throughout the whole tour, it was fun to be with Andy. One time you were talking with some people, and he walked, him and I, and then another couple from Oklahoma. We walked around town because Andy, once we got to Jerusalem, he liked Jerusalem better.
Andy's all about city life.
And so he was out, and even him and some of the other, there were some other younger guys there, and so they would go out, and so he knew the town quite well. And he became a good tour guide. And so
where were the single girls? We had a bunch of older single guys, or twenties, early thirties. Yeah, there was just no girls at it. Guys. I mean, usually on this trip, it'd be the opposite of that. But
and Andrew's got quite a sense of wit about him too, and so it was it was really good to have him. This is his first trip international, and so that was a whole new experience for him. Of course, it was one of the longer flight over, so just being able to fly with him over and back, and it was a special thing to have him. It would have been nice to have Julie there, but that didn't work.
No, not this go around anyway. And he was a bit sick on the way home, so the flight home was a little rough on him, as it was some others. We had a little bit of a flu bug, respiratory infection bugs,
and colds. It was just
kind of passing through the bus at various times, so we had to endure that with each other. But some people had to take a day out just to recover from something, so we missed some people on some days. But as fun as it was to be in Israel and to see the things we saw, let me just read to you. I've gotten three comments back from people just in the last this morning, actually. And I thought they capture it pretty well. And I hope some of you flesh this out with, you know, calls to the comment line or Skype me or something.
Is this from people who were on the trip?
Yeah, people who were there. This is from a lady in Canada. She said, "This was truly an awesome trip for us. The best of my life to date. And what an absolute pleasure to have met so many beautiful new friends." And this from a gal who's actually living in the Middle East and in a sensitive country. So you'll understand the context of what she writes. She writes this: "One of the most incredible experiences of my life, and I am stuck with not being able to talk about it. I think the Lord is in that somewhere, something to treasure." And then this from my friend, this he posted on a blog, so this is from Silvio in Switzerland. He said, "And what's more, it was so natural to be together and share our lives. That's what I love. The bonds come so quickly and they stay. We, speaking of his wife Dominique, just miss all these people. In 10 days, we shared so many things. And I think that the thing that touched our guide is that nobody had an agenda. As he himself said, we were free thinkers. But as one of them said immediately after, only the first part is true. Not sure about the second." So I guess they were free, but not thinkers. Mm-hmm. I think that's what that's about. I think what everybody came away with, as powerful as Israel is, and I'm sure various things happened in hearts at various venues, this group of people connected in a way I knew they would. I kept talking about before we go. I think what people come back with is a whole set of new friends, people they can laugh. And it wasn't just laughter and humor. There was tons of that. But there's also some deep stuff people were going through, and they just opened up their hearts. And There were times we prayed. There was some people went through some crisis points while we were on the trip. And it just unfolded. I watched a group of people, and I blogged about this the other day. I watched a group of people become a family.
Yep.
Because they had a common passion, and we had a proximity to each other. We were together for 10 days in a bus in the same hotel, eating together. And people say, well, that's pretty artificial environment. And it is. But the relationships that are spawned in that are not artificial.
Yeah.
They're real. I've watched them happen before. I know these people will cross paths with each other for years to come. They'll correspond on the internet. They'll poke fun on each other's Facebook pages. And at some point, various ones of them will travel and be with others. And to me, that's the joy of watching this family take shape in the world. And I think also it's kind of a reminder that we can have that same thing at home, but we may have to break out of some of the routines we're in that aren't necessarily community building. I mean, if we're, you know, we have a lot of distractions in our world, a lot of TV we watch, responsibilities we're doing, and we don't always make time to engage people. It takes the making time to engage people. And certainly when you're together every minute virtually for 10 days, you move some relationships a long way down the road. But
yeah, you do. And but then it was nice towards the maybe in the middle, I don't know at what point, but then people had their cameras and they were asking other people, you know, to take their camera and get their pictures, and people were just helping each other like that. And then with the internet, our internet was always wasn't the best. I mean, it probably was better the way we had it because we had internet one night in our rooms, and all the other times we had to go down in the lobbies in order to get internet or
unless you wanted to pay through the nose.
Pay a lot of money. And so, but then with that, then there were people down in the lobby and you know, having a lot of conversations down there because if you're going to be doing any kind of internet, you were down there. You had to be down there. So
yeah, it was hard for me to get anything done down there. I'd end up in more conversations.
Yeah.
And I found people want to even be on the tour. There are people who came because they want to interact with some of the things they've read or heard that I've said. So I ended up adding a couple of nights where people just sat for an hour and a half or more just to talk about the journey, it wasn't Israel at all. It's just their journey, the church, how's it taking shape in the world, what's going on with my new book. We just spent time in that conversation. Not only we had those two organized times that went for a while, and most of the people were there, and it wasn't required at all. And then got into those conversations a lot in meals or on the buses. And I love the fact on the bus, people didn't always stick with their spouse. They moved around.
Nope, they did move around. The people were in the back of the bus and kind of in the front of the bus, and they kind of tried to move around. And so, but then when we had the day off, that was, first of all, nice to have a day off.
It was.
When we were walking around, and then we were And there was a couple spots, and that where we started, probably ended up seeing half the group on separate things, just walking around the city. And yeah. So that was bizarre.
It was bizarre. When you know how big it is and how many people are in there, that we kept crossing people from, there's only 40 people in Jerusalem we know, and we kept crossing paths with them.
Then a lot of them went back, not a lot, there was a handful that went back and talked to the one person at the shop that, to talk to him and see his shop.
It's a place we stopped on the tour just briefly. And then other people went back to that shop to talk. The man engaged us for a while. He's a Jewish man. And engaged us in a way that was a little pushy, I think. And yet people wanted to go back and engage him.
They did talk to him. So, I mean, there was just so many different aspects. It wasn't just about what was there that we saw. So anyhow.
Yeah, many people say, well, gosh, that probably happens on every tour. You put 20 people in a bus, 40 people in a bus, and they're together all the time. This always happens. Well, not according to our bus driver and our guide. They began to pick up very early that there was something with this group. And he kept asking me, how do these people know each other? And I said, they arrived at an airport together. He goes, what, they don't know each other? I said, not before we started on this trip. Very few of them had any contact with anyone else in the group. I'd had quite a bit of contact with various ones. But and he says, really? And then he was asking other people about me. He wanted to know who this guy is, who Wayne is, why you're here, and what makes him tick. And I think very early he became engaged with the fact that this was a little bit different than the normal tour he leads. And he even came in one morning. He said, I've consulted Rabbi Google about you. And I said, what? He said, I Googled you yesterday. And he said, there's a lot Rabbi Google thinks of you. And I said, yeah, not all of it good. And he said, everything I read was pretty good. And so we got into, he was listening in. Most of the tour guides, they kind of set up the site. And then if I'm going to share for a little bit, they go away. He kept hanging in the background, listening, very much engaged, would talk about some of the things with me later. One exercise we did on the very first day, he kept saying, I'm going to use that again. I'm going to do that exact thing you did because that really helps people grasp what was here. And then toward the end of our trip, there were some moments that really engaged him. One, we were coming down from the Mount of Olives on similar road to what Jesus would have walked the day he did the triumphal entry. And we were on our way down to Gethsemane is where we were headed. And we were a little early for an appointment we had there in the private part of the garden. So we pulled off into this Jewish cemetery where we were just overlooked Temple Mount and the Dome of the Rock that sits there, the gold-domed feature in the middle of Jerusalem. And we had some sharing, we did some singing, and then just hugs broke out all around. And people engaged him just like he was part of the group with hugs. And he teared up. He told me later that I was just undone by that kind of affection. And he tries to maintain a professional distance from groups. And he told me at the end of the day, we got back to the hotel and people have got about 2 hours, 2.5 hours to get ready to go to the airport. And a lot of people just hanging out in the lobby because they didn't have rooms anymore to hang out in. And he sat over with us and people had things to drink and were sitting around this table and pulling out pictures. And he was sharing his wife and grandkids. And as everybody was packing up the bus a little bit later, he said, you've broken every rule I have for myself. And I said, what are you talking about? I haven't broken any rules. He said, I've broken every one. He said, I never sit with a tour group and just talk like that. I always feel like that's not my job and I need to keep a distance. He said, I couldn't help myself. I wanted to sit and talk to these people. And he was really, really touched by what happened. And all the more so that we were people from all over the world. And we couldn't figure out why we were together other than they'd read my stuff and people wanted to kind of hang out with me on that trip. But, you know, I told Sarah and I talked about this earlier. After 2 or 3 days on the trip, I didn't catch that people came to hang out with me. They were so engaged with each other. And, yeah, I was one of the ones they were engaging. But I didn't feel like the focal point. And that was a blessing to me in ways I can't tell you.
Then the bus driver was... He was such a good sport. And
Gabriel. He kept saying he was the angel Gabriel.
Yeah, he was great.
he had some funny one-liners that only you and I heard, though.
Yeah. And we were sitting right behind him. And, man, even watching him, he gets an A++ for even how they drive those buses with everything out there. It's just like I got used to it after a while, but the first morning when we got in the bus and then trying to get out of the parking lot, oh my gosh, it was
made you nervous, did he?
I knew he knew what he was doing, but it's amazing. You'd have inches and he was going by other ones. And we would clap really when he would go by and we would be clapping for him and everything. He was just fun. He was just a great, great guy.
Yeah, there's one time we went through. I mean, we had maybe 4 centimeters of clearance and got by it. And somebody said, 4 meters. And somebody said, we wasted 3. He probably could have done it with 1.
Yeah, so just amazing. But he was so nice, too, and he was just...
Yeah, he told us at the end, he said, there's few tour groups he really misses at the end. And he said, I will miss you. I will miss this people. I will miss you guys. And that was pretty cool.
Even just watching everybody when they come on, because we were right at the front, and so people leaving and coming back on, and they were just, you know, very thankful to him and would talk to him, and it was, he was just like part of the group.
Yeah. See, I've been part of this for the last 20 years, wherever I travel. We had a big event in Ireland a few years ago where people from all over the world came together. I'm often in places, even if it's 25, 30, come together for a weekend. People may come from a little bit of a wider area to come together. And what I always see is how people who are on this journey connect so easily. And it's not over we see the same doctrine. In fact, we'd probably find disagreements if we talked too deeply about theology, but the commonality of knowing God as Father and Jesus as older brother, when people get near each other, the whole idea of fellowship, community, the church taking shape in the world is not so difficult. It's actually fairly easy if we're on a journey that's creating that openness and space in our heart for others. And as Silvio said here, when we don't have an agenda, when we're, and I love that about people on the bus. There wasn't, with the folks that were together, there wasn't a lot of agenda or pushing people to have the same experience they were having. And there wasn't a lot of that. There was a little bit of it from time to time. But for the most part, people just let each other be who they were.
Yep.
And a simple, and people say, I don't even know what to talk about at a time like that. All you have to say is, someone, tell me a bit of your story. And you have a testimony? Just tell me your story. What's important to you about your life? Help me know who you are. And that is enough conversation, particularly if you take an interest in it and ask them more questions. You begin to find out a lot about people. And as you begin to find out about them, you begin to care for them. And as you find out what in their life is working well and what in their life is causing them to be challenged or to struggle, it just works an endearment into the heart.
Yeah. And even the conversations that would go on while we did a lot of walking, because there was a lot of places to walk, and where we were walking and we're going somewhere, but, you know, there was time to engage and find out about different people and at different places that we were going to.
Yeah, I love that. How a group will just trail off and there's little pockets of conversation going on. And it was ever changing. Even people where they sat in the bus changed. And people were really about engaging each other as well as being in this incredible land we were in.
We had the little stragglers every now and then when we finally caught up with Steve, who joined it from the tour company. It was always nice once he was there, because once we saw Steve, we knew everybody was together. So
yeah, when we got on the bus, we always counted off so we would know, you know, that everybody was there. We weren't leaving anybody behind. And we always, it's like 7, 13, 33. And 33 was always there, but couldn't follow the counting for some reason. So 32, and I'd look at him and he would look at me and thought, oh, yeah, my goodness. It was hilarious. So some numbers got pretty well known.
Yep.
Because they were the problem.
Yep. We would say number 13 or number whatever they were.
Yeah, it was a great time, though. We really enjoyed the people who came. I guess my biggest disappointment, and people who have not been before wouldn't know this, but the last day for me, there were so many venues that were being Christianized, that were being moved from being a natural, pristine place to then being owned as a tour spot. One of those, the first one we ended up that morning was Gethsemane, and it was just a garden with boulders and grass and weeds among these trees, and one big boulder we all sat on and talked about the cross last time I was there, and I was asking the guy, is that boulder still there? He goes, boulder, what boulder? I said, there's a big boulder in the back. He said, I don't know there's any boulder in that garden. I'm thinking, no, nobody would have moved that boulder. It was too big. Well, we walk in there, and they'd built a patio over that boulder and made this big place with benches and a pulpit so people could do teaching things in there. And instead of just sitting among the trees and talking and sitting on that rock, it was all gone. And then went from there to Caiaphas' house, which last time we'd spent some time in the interrogation room and then moved into the holding cell that he would have been in overnight. And it was all closed off and it was dark. And it had this rustic stairway. Well, now the stairway's all encased in stone. It's been cutouts from above so people can look in. Oh, my gosh. I was sitting there going, this is so – and we didn't see the interrogation room at all. And I got thinking, when I left, I'm not in the same place. And I sat down with Daniel, our guide, and I said, what happened? And he said, oh, just so many people want to see it that some of the parts had to be cut out so that interrogation room isn't even seen anymore. Some of that broke my heart, because that's when they would have said, you know, this is the man who said he would tear down the temple and he would build it in 3 days. These were the accusations were raised about him as the religious leaders were deciding what to do, and it wasn't there. And then we got to the garden tomb, which no one knows if it's that tomb or over somewhere else, but if it's, it could have been, might have been the very tomb. Now they got bars in it to separate a viewing area from the actual place where they would have laid his body. And last time we could go right in there. And
it only takes a handful of people to ruin it for others. But I mean, for us who hadn't been there before, we didn't know.
But I kept having to drag myself out of ground, out of the bottom of a pit. I was going, why did this, why? And then we got the garden tomb. And this is something probably for a whole other podcast. And I know we've talked about it before at the God Journey, but the whole intrusiveness of religion, how religion doesn't let people find faith. It's got to throw it in their face. And there was a couple of things just being in the city like that, just where the conflict of Judaism, Islam, and Christianity all fight for space, and moments when the I would consider the annoying call to prayer out of the minaret is just loud and obnoxious. And then as soon as that's over, bells from the, which a better sound, but still intrusively painful. And when we got to the garden tomb, I just, there was a group there singing worship songs with guitars. And they've been there a long time, and they just kept louder and louder and just wouldn't let people realize that we've overstayed our welcome. Why don't we move to a different area of the garden if we want to continue to do this? Yeah. But wanted to dominate that space for every other group that came in. And I think that's what tires me about Christianity and all religious groups is it's aggressive. It's in your face, and you do it with a sense of evangelism or whatever we're doing. That intrusiveness just keeps coming up over and over.
They were pushy about it, and they were. It would have been nice, because that is a very sobering place. I mean, it was just going in there, not knowing. I mean, it may or may not have been the place, but it was something similar to that, and that's a.
And it may have been the place.
It could have been the place.
It's right near where Golgotha is, where the cross may have been. And these guys are just driving the song. They keep going, and they're smiling. And you can tell it's more of a performance. It's not like they're having a real worship engagement. They're doing something for everybody else. And that's that same agenda we talked about earlier. It's a more subtle agenda. But it's still, we're going to occupy this space our way, and we're going to be a blessing to you by forcing it down your throat. I don't know what that's all going on in their minds, but...
Because right then and there, there's a lot to take in, because you see the actual, track or groove where
the stone would have rolled.
And so you're stepping over that, and you're actually seeing where it would have rolled. You're going in, and you're in this little, room, and then it's got a little area compartments on the side, but as yet it's all open. But for me, just to actually see the groove where the stone would have rolled, and I mean it was similar like that, and when you got the noise, it's something you had to mentally try to block out the noise so you can be able to have your own time to.
And as sure as we're saying that, there's probably a dozen people or so that were with us that loved having that music. And you go, that email. Yeah, I love that stuff.
That's all personal preference.
It is. But there is an awareness. And I think that's one of the things that makes our group work, the bus. There is something about being aware that I'm not in the space to control it. Yeah. It is the opposite of religion and seems to be an earmark of people who are on a journey of faith and relationship and being loved, that they don't have to possess space and force it on others. And that's as true in a conversation as it is in some of these sites. I know Daniel, our guide, when we went into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is where the Catholics believe Golgotha is and the tomb, even though they're not there, it's all covered by a cathedral and there's some weird stuff that goes on there. But he told me going there, I'm going to pick a fight. I'm like, what? And I think because he knew where our group was, he wanted them to see how the religious people in that building bully people to get their way. And so there was trying to clear out a space for a procession, this holy man with his incense to come through and sanctify the tomb another 7 millionth time in the last 2 decades. But he's kind of forcing his way through. And this guy's talking down to everybody. So our guy just turned to him and says, don't talk down to me. And he kind of stood up into his face, and the other guy just got even more fierce and everything. We walked on. Daniel said, you know, they're paid to be bullies. As soon as that guy becomes a nice guy, they move him out for someone else. And he was wanting us to see that, because he knew it would mean something to us, that that's the way religion has been. That's why Islam takes Temple Mount and builds their own edifices up there and claim that Muhammad came there in a dream, because he never came there physically. It's why they put a cemetery outside the Eastern Gate to defy the Jewish hope of Messiah coming through the Eastern Gate. And it just goes on and on in that space, not just religiously, but politically as well. Well, this is a long podcast, babe. Anything else you want to say before we let these people go?
No, it was just interesting, too, with Daniel. He was very good and as we were driving around the country, because we used to see the Lebanese border and Syria and Jordan, and to be able to see how just a power keg that is over there in that area. And so he was also very helpful in just today's current, you know, political situation and what is happening to everybody there.
Yeah, and the Arab Spring is not an exciting thing for Israel. It's a little bit unnerving, all this revolution going on, Egypt, Tunisia, other countries near them. And they're in the middle of all that, what's going on in Iraq and Iran. And you get a feel for that, and you also get a feel for the Palestinian problem, and that it's not, it's an occupied territory, and people there are not being treated fairly and well. And yet, what's the risk if we tried to? And there's missiles now 2 minutes from Israel, if the same thing happens there that's happening in Gaza. And so there's no easy answer to some of those problems.
No,
and
it was, not at all.
Yeah. So I guess we'll call it quits here because it's late. Again, those of you that were with me on the trip and you guys want to put your 2 cents worth into this, please give me a call. Comment the God Journey line, 805-539-6980. Or you can just leave voicemail at thegodjourney.com on Skype. Either one of those will get you to me. Love to include some of your thoughts and observations if you want to. No pressure. If you don't, we'll go on another direction. But glad you went?
Yes.
Yes. I'm glad you went too, babe. It was fun to share. Some people said, I'm so glad you shared your Valentine gift to Sarah with the rest of us. I was like, it wasn't really that from the beginning. It was, if I ever go, I thought I would take some others as well, because that makes the experience, as we've seen, all the richer.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.